Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. You can't control where or when you were born. You can't poke your head out, look around, and say, nope, don't like the scene. How about Liverpool, 1962? You're stuck with the scene you fall into when you're a teenager, wherever that is. Fortunately, we here at Soundcheck can do something about that for you. For example, if you missed Billie Holiday, the great but troubled jazz singer during her heyday in New York in the 1940s, we've got jazz singer Dee Dee Bridgewater here, channeling Billie Holiday for us, something she does every night in the musical called Lady Day. And if you ever wondered what music sounded like in Minneapolis before Prince broke out of that scene 30 years ago, well, we'll take care of that too, with the curator of a new compilation of early funk and R&B from the Twin Cities, and one of Prince's earliest bandmates. Turns out the Twin Cities in the 1970s was a place full of surprises. A teenaged Prince Nelson, as he was then known, started playing guitar, and down the road, two brothers named Joel and Ethan Coen started making home movies. Now the Coen brothers are delivering us back in time to yet another of America's great music scenes. Greenwich Village, the folk revival, the early 1960s. The movie is called Inside Llewyn Davis.
If I had wings like Nora's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. Fare thee well, oh honey.
That is Oscar Isaac, the actor and, as it turns out, singer and guitarist. He plays the title role in the film, Inside Llewyn Davis. His character is a down-on-his-luck musician whose career has hit a wall. Oscar performs live songs throughout the film and obviously plays a big role in the soundtrack, which was produced by T-Bone Burnett. Oscar Isaac joins us to talk about Inside Llewyn Davis. Oscar, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, happy to be here.
So this is a story about a folk singer who can't catch a break. Is he unlucky? Does he make his own bad luck by being a jerk? How do you see Llewyn Davis?
Well, both of those things, I think, for sure. It is an acknowledgement of luck and how you need a lot of things to go your way in order to succeed, or at least succeed without ever having to compromise, which is something that the Coens have done from the very beginning, from
right.
Blood Simple. They have never once had to compromise their vision. And yes, they're geniuses, but they're lucky geniuses. and Llewyn wants to be that kind of artist. He wants to not compromise. He has an idea of what he wants to express, but he just doesn't have the luck not to do it.
Right. Now, how was it for you kind of stepping into this character and having to play songs, you know, in right there on camera in front of a live audience, et cetera?
Well, it actually reminded me a lot of recording in the studio. You know, I've played music for a long time, and so, you know, you do a take, and then if you want to do it again, you feel like you can get it a little better, you do it again. And recently I've been recording full takes, mm-hmm. meaning I don't punch in to fix a certain section I'm unhappy with. And so some of the pressure was off, actually. I find it more terrifying to play a show in front of a lot of people because, you know, you really only have the one chance to get it right. So
right.
The pressure's on.
Well, I mean, there's an early moment in the film where you, in the title role of Llewyn Davis, you're performing for a crowd at the Gaslight Cafe, mm-hmm. which was a real venue on McDougal Street in Greenwich Village. And this is the song that that Oscar Isaac is playing as Llewyn Davis.
Hang me, oh, hang me, I'll be dead and gone. Hang me, oh, hang me, I'll be dead and gone. I wouldn't mind the hanging, but the laying in the grave so long, poor boy, I've been all around this world. I've been all around Cape Girardeau, parts of Arkansas, all around Cape Girardeau, parts of Arkansas. I got so goddamn hungry I could hide behind a straw poor boy, been all around this world.
Hang Me, Oh Hang Me is the name of the song. Oscar Isaac in the role of the character Llewyn Davis from the new Coen Brothers movie Inside Llewyn Davis. That title is a nod to the album Inside Dave Van Ronk, which Dave Van Ronk was known as the mayor of McDougal Street.
Correct.
This kind of big, important figure, kind of a father figure, actually, to people like a young Bob Dylan, etc.
A mentor of sorts.
Did you know Dave Van Ronk's stuff?
Beforehand, I didn't. I had seen him in the Martin Scorsese documentary, No Direction Home.
Right.
And that was my first introduction into him. So when I first began this odyssey of joining this film, it was a complete crash course in his music, and not only his music, but the music that he listened to, like people like Reverend Gary Davis, and where he developed this particular style of playing. This, you know, he's a Travis picker, and he plays this ragtime, very similar stride piano type style of guitar. And
yeah.
Actually, Van Ronk in his book talks about how he feels piano was probably the most suitable instrument for him. But by the time he realized that, he'd already been playing guitar for 15 years, and it was too late.
Yeah. You know? Now, you mentioned Reverend Gary Davis. I mean, here's a Southerner who moved up to New York, lived in Harlem, you know, blind blues guitarist from the South, and just a line of white guys beating a path to his door, Dave
right.
Van Ronk among them,
yeah.
to study with him. But that wasn't the kind of music you grew up playing, was it?
No. I mean, I did grow up listening to Dylan, Simon and Garfunkel, Cat Stevens, The Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, but I wasn't aware of the music before Dylan.
Right.
You know, I knew Pete Seeger.
Well, but even those names you just mentioned, that's way before your time. That
well,
was
yes,
like
well,
your parents' music.
Well, yes. Yeah, so my dad was a musician. So I did have that basis.
And so when it came time to, you know, start learning this kind of blues-based guitar stuff, How long did it take you to pick that up?
Well, interestingly enough, when I found out that I was granted an audition with the Coens themselves, by this point I knew that their story was loosely based on a character very similar to Van Ronk,
mm-hmm.
someone from the boroughs. And the song we were all given to learn, everyone that was vying for the part, was Hang Me, Oh Hang Me.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first time I'd ever heard that song, and that was the first time I'd ever heard him play Van Ronk. This is a wonderful recording of him singing that song.
Hang me, oh hang me, I'll be dead and gone. Hang me, oh hang me, I'll be dead and gone. Wouldn't mind the hanging, but the laying in the grave so long, poor boy, I've been all around this world.
So I latched onto it for dear life, and I had listened to everything Van Ronk had ever played, ever recorded. There's a DVD that Stefan Grossman, you know,
Great guitarist.
Yes,
yeah.
that they sell a DVD of Van Ronk teaching you how to play some of his songs, so I got that. And I happened to be doing this very small movie in Long Island, and there was a guy in the scene who was basically a featured extra, older drunk guy at the bar. And in between takes, he picked up a guitar and started finger-picking, Travis-picking so incredibly in exactly the style that I wanted to learn. So I went up to him, and I said, hey, what's your name? He said, my name's Eric Franzen. And I said, oh, well, you know, I'm auditioning for this thing. You're amazing. I'm auditioning for this thing kind of based on Dave Van Ronk. Have you ever heard of Dave? He says, yeah, I played with Dave. and he's like, you want some guitar lessons? I said, sure. And he's like, come to my place on McDougal Street. I live above the old gaslight. So I go to his place, and he starts teaching me how to play. And I start playing. I start opening up for him at Cafe Vivaldi and a couple other little places where they have these open mics.
So you're opening for the extra.
Yeah. He's an incredible musician and an actor, too. And so he really gave me a crash course in that style of playing. One of the funny things he said to me is, how long have you been playing? I said, about 20 years. And he goes, no, you've owned a guitar for 20 years. You've been playing maybe for like 6 months.
Nice.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Oscar Isaac, the star of the new film Inside Llewyn Davis, written and directed by the Coen brothers. The film opens in select theaters here in New York this weekend and then expands its release nationwide later this month. Let's hear Oscar Isaac and his guitar in a song that Dave Van Ronk, in fact, recorded himself. It's called Green, Green, Rocky Road.
When I go back Baltimore, need no carpet on my floor. You come along and follow me. We'll go down to Galilee. Howling green, green, rocky road. You're promenading green. Tell me who you love, tell me who you love. See that crow up in the sky, it don't walk. But he just fly, it don't walk. But he don't run, keep on flapping to the sun. Howling green, green, rocky road. You're promenading green. Tell me who you love, tell me who you love.
A little bit of Green, Green, Rocky Road from Oscar Isaac in the role of Llewyn Davis from the movie Inside Llewyn Davis, set here in New York. It's 1961, it's the Greenwich Village folk music scene. Llewyn Davis is not Dave Van Ronk, although like Dave, he's originally from Queens. He's got a seaman's license from the Merchant Marine, so there's always that to fall back on, he thinks, if the music doesn't pan out. But whereas Dave Van Ronk was a big bear of a man and, as we mentioned before, kind of a mentor and father figure, Llewyn Davis is, you know, a guy whose career has been derailed by the death of his partner. His pregnant girlfriend hates him. He's sleeping on people's couches. And, you know, he's just not really good with people skills.
Yeah, he's not the mayor of anything.
No, he's not.
he's not. He's a man that's disconnected. He's been shut off. And really, he's a man in grief. And I think that's one of the big themes of the film as well. He's grieving not only the loss of his partner, but what his life could have been or should be. It's this weight that's compressing him and not allowing him to connect with anyone. He's floating through life as an outsider. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of artists have moments where, you know, you feel like, I don't connect to anything. You know, you're so used to having that observant eye watching every interaction you have that eventually, at least in my experience, oftentimes, you know, you can be in a crowd and feel the loneliest you've ever felt in your life. And I think that's what's happening to him. And the only bridge is his music, mm-hmm. is when he picks up the guitar and sings. That's the only thing he has to offer.
Well, now, and as is so typical of the Coen brothers, they managed to walk this line between tragedy and comedy. I mean, he is a tragic figure, and yet it's a funny movie.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that's what they're so brilliant at. They remind me, the only thing I can even compare it to is Chekhov, which is very similar, where you've got these people that are not totally very likable, often quite vile, and they're in these tragic situations, yet there's such an absurdity happening at the same time. It's a screwball tragedy.
Solo act?
Yeah, now.
Now? Used to what? Work with a cat? Every time he'd play a C major, he'd puke a hairball.
He used to have a partner.
What happened?
Threw himself off the George Washington Bridge.
Well, I don't blame him. I couldn't take it either, having to play Jimmy Crack Corn every night. Oh, pardon me for saying so. That's pretty stupid, isn't it? George Washington Bridge. You throw yourself off the Brooklyn Bridge, traditionally. George Washington Bridge. Who does that?
That's John Goodman and my guest Oscar Isaac in a scene from the film Inside Llewyn Davis. So, Oscar, your character, Llewyn Davis, he makes poor decisions. He makes poor life decisions. He even makes poor musical decisions. There's a key scene where he has, by hook or by crook, somehow gotten himself out to Chicago, and he is going to play for Is it Ben Grossman? Is that Bud Grossman?
Bud Grossman.
It's clearly based on Bob Dylan's manager, Albert Grossman. Yeah. Who is played by F. Murray Abraham. And he chooses what?
Yes. Here's a moment where he has the ear of the gatekeeper,
mm-hmm.
right? The person that can finally give him a break. And he thinks, what is the song that is the most true and the most honest to what's happening to me right now? And instead of playing the hit, he chooses a song about a medieval C-section called The Death of Queen Jane. The thing is, he thinks that's what'll mm-hmm. touch him the most. You know, he's not thinking in terms of career. He's thinking in terms of honesty. And that's the amazing thing about folk artists and the folk musicians, particularly of that time, is they were preservationists. They were curators. They would find an old, archaic, strange song and make it vital and mm-hmm. new and completely about the moment.
Well, and this song, The Death of Queen Jane, it's an old ballad, but the music is actually by this Irish guitarist,
Dahi
Sproul.
Yes.
From the band Altan, and before that,
the Bothy Band. Yeah.
The Bothy Band did a version. Oh, right. So you know your Irish music. Oh, very good. but this is Oscar Isaac's version from the soundtrack to the film Inside Llewyn Davis. The soundtrack, by the way, out now.
Queen Jane lay in labor for 9 days or more, till the women grew so tired, could no longer there. They could no longer there. Good women, good women, good women.
Death of Queen Jane. That's Oscar Isaac, my guest on Soundcheck. He is the star, the title character in the new Coen Brothers film Inside Llewyn Davis. And the soundtrack is out, produced by T-Bone Burnett, who also did O Brother, Where Art Thou? And features you getting a chance to work with people like Marcus Mumford from Mumford & Sons, Justin Timberlake, who, while we all know the falsetto voice, does some pretty neat bass singing at one point in this film as well. And there is one moment where Llewyn has a chance to make some quick cash, doing a session for his friend Jim, played by Justin Timberlake, and this odd character with a deep voice who goes by the name Al Cody, who has a secret of his own that he's hiding. The song is called Please, Mr. Kennedy. This seems to already be generating a little bit of internet buzz.
Mm. Yeah, it's this is a moment where you see that Llewyn is not above hypocrisy. When he really needs the cash, he'll go into the studio and record a novelty song. But I think what's genius about the song is that although Llewyn thinks it's a bad song, it's not a bad song. The joke is, the audience is in on the joke, because in a movie, like T-Bone says, if you put a bad song in a movie, it's just bad and it makes the movie bad. But if we tell the audience it's a bad song, but the song's actually a great song, then we all get to enjoy it. And I think that this is one of those moments.
This is the song Please, Mr. Kennedy, featuring my guest Oscar Isaac with Adam Driver and Justin Timberlake.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4.
1 second, please.
Please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go.
Don't
show
me out of school.
Oh, please, Mr. Kennedy.
Uh-oh.
I don't want to go.
Don't
show
me out of school.
I sweat when they stuff me in the pressure suits. Bubble helmet, flash board and boots. Nowhere up there in gravity zero. I need to breathe, don't need to be a hero. And reading me loud and clear, oh, please, Mr. Kennedy.
That is Oscar Isaac with Adam Driver and Justin Timberlake from the soundtrack to the film Inside Llewyn Davis. Oscar Isaac stars in the title role of this new Coen Brothers film, which opens in select theaters here in New York this weekend and then expands its release later this month. Before you go, Oscar, I just have to ask about the cat, because it's a running gag that, you know, Lewin has sort of accidentally become the custodian of his rich friend's cat.
Yes.
Were there problems working on set with a cat affixed to your arm?
Were there? Yes, there were. Yeah, it was definitely a challenge. There's a reason why they say don't work with children or animals. It's because they don't really care about the movie-making process, particularly these cats. It was very hard to train them, so we had about four or five of them, because since you couldn't train them, you needed one that could do the thing you needed to do mm-hmm. in that particular scene. So you had one that was more calm, you had one that was a little squirrelier, and that's the one they'd have to tie to me. Because they didn't want it to run off and get run over by a subway car.
So it would literally be tied to your arm.
It would be tied to my arm, and sometimes it was not very happy about that.
No, I wouldn't think so.
And it would try very hard to get away from me. And, yeah, we had a few moments there. But it's such a great thing that they add. You know, it immediately undercuts Lewin's seriousness.
Mm-hmm.
He immediately has to be responsible for this very vulnerable yet impenetrable thing, so it's clearly a mirror of himself. And by the end of it, you know, you see it's the Incredible Journey poster, and you're not sure, was it the cat's journey or was it Lewin's journey?
All right, so I assume there was a medic on stage, on set.
Yeah, standing in the wings at all times.
The film is Inside Lewin Davis, opening this weekend in New York and then nationwide later in December, but the soundtrack is out now. It is full of great music, beautifully played. Oscar Isaac, star of the film, great job on it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, great talking to you.
If I had wings like Noah's dove, I'd fly the river to the one I love. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well. Well, I had a man, strong and tall. He moved his body like a cannonball. Oh, fare thee well, my honey, fare thee well.
Coming up, Dee Dee Bridgewater evokes the spirit of Billie Holiday in our studio. And later, a look at the Minneapolis music scene of the 1970s and early 80s that spawned a royal superstar. This is Soundcheck.
The mood is right, the spirit's up. We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
If you're sick of holiday songs already and you need to listen to something else this month, get ready for the 12 Days of Soundcheck. Starting Monday, December 9th, visit soundcheck.org to download a free song from one of our favorite in-studio sessions from 2013. It'll be a different artist every day. Could be Dirty Projectors one day, Bobby McFerrin the next. And each song is available for 24 hours only. And none of it is holiday music. So visit soundcheck.org every weekday, Monday, December 9th through Christmas Eve. It's the 12 Days of Soundcheck.
Lady sings the blues. She's got 'em bad. She feels so sad. Wants the world to know just what the blues is all about.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Grammy and Tony Award-winning singer and actress Dee Dee Bridgewater has covered a lot of ground during her career, but something keeps bringing her back to Billie Holiday. In the early 1980s, Dee Dee portrayed Billie Holiday during the first run of the Stephen Stahl stage production called Lady Day. More recently, she put her own spin on classic Billie Holiday tunes for an album called Eleonora Fagan, 1915 to 1959, to Billy with Love from Dee Dee Bridgewater. Now Dee Dee's back on stage once again as Billie Holiday in the off-Broadway production of Lady Day, and she's here with me in the Soundcheck studio today, and she's going to get us started with Can't Get Started.
And that's how I feel. Okay, Bill.
in a plane. I've charted revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I've charted, but I can't get started with you. And at the golf course, I'm under par. Metro Goldwyn wants me to star. Got a house, a show place. I can't get no place with you. You're so supreme. The lyrics I write of your scheme, just for the sight of your scheme, both day and night of you. But what good does it do? I've been consulted by Franklin D. Even Gable asked me to tea. I'm broken hearted. I can't get started with you. You're so supreme. The lyrics I write of your scheme, for the sight of your dream, both day and night of you. But what good does it do? I've been consulted by Franklin D. Even Basie asked me to tea. I'm broken hearted. I can't get started with you. Thank you, Bill Jolly.
Dee Dee Bridgewater, live in the Soundcheck studio with Bill Jolly at the piano, and Can't Get Started. Dee Dee Bridgewater channeling her inner Billie Holiday, as she has done to great effect in the past, and does so each night in the off-Broadway show called Lady Day. Bill Jolly, in addition to being the pianist in the show, is also playing the role of Sonny, who was Billie Holiday's pianist. And James Kamak, also joining us on double bass. He plays the role of Dion in the stage play by Stephen Stahl. Dee Dee Bridgewater, welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, thank you, John Schaefer. How are you?
I am well. How about you?
I'm okay. This is my morning.
You know, you have this is a tough schedule.
It is a tough schedule. It really is, and I'm starting to feel it. I have to honestly say.
I mean, you have a long award-winning career in your own voice,
yeah.
And then you have this kind of doppelganger career in kind of Billie Holiday's voice.
Yeah, kind of. It's not, you know, it's for sure not, and I'm not trying to impersonate.
Right.
Really, and nor really imitate. I just, from doing the show in 87 in London, towards the end of the run at the Piccadilly Theater, I just felt she had possessed me. And I was doing the show originally in my own voice, singing in my own voice, and it just morphed. It just morphed into her voice.
Yeah.
And so she's been with me ever since.
So is it, you know, when you're out on stage doing these songs, is it a conscious thing? Do you have to remember, oh, no, don't sing like Dee Dee, sing it like Billie?
No,
or is
it's
it,
not, it, no.
It's completely
I don't,
organic.
I've never had that.
Yeah.
I've never had that experience. What I did, not singing like, but phrasing.
Mm.
Don't phrase like I phrase. I have to phrase like Billie.
Now, what, you know, she had a somewhat unconventional approach to phrasing, didn't she?
Yes, she did. Well,
is that one of the things that brings you back to her?
You know, I don't know what it is that brings me back to Billie. I don't know. I mean, last night I just finished rereading Lady Sings the Blues. I just felt, you know, I need to go back and reconnect with her life and mm-hmm. and just so that I can have new fuel for, you know, what I'm doing and how I'm interpreting the role and different scenes that I have in the play. But what I found is that I just had a lot of odd similarities with her life and mine. My mother's maiden name is Holiday. But she spells it with two L's, and she's always said Billie spelled it wrong.
Well, and of course, Billie Holiday was not her real name. It is,
no,
as you titled
yes,
your record,
Eleanora Fagan.
Eleanora Fagan.
Yeah, but you know, but I thought, well, that's interesting. She always had dogs. I have had dogs since mm-hmm. I'm an adult, and I tour so much.
But Dee Dee, you know, having dogs, that's a pretty minor thing. When you start comparing life,
and then I've, you know,
life experience.
The life experiences, you know, I had issues in Catholic school. I was put out of my Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
But I do understand the harsh treatment. Of course, she was locked in a room to be punished with a dead body of a girl that went to the Catholic school that she was at.
And
then, you know, she had problems, you know, rape issues. I had rape and molestation issues when I was young.
As a kid?
As a kid.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, bad choices in men, but, you know.
Hey. So how does, I mean, this is a dark play, you know.
It is.
And there's a lot of darkness in mm-hmm. Billie Holiday's life. And how difficult is that for you every night to have to get out there and in between, you know, in Act One, it's basically you and the guys rehearsing for Act Two's
mm-hmm.
show.
Mm-hmm.
And Billie is having these kind of flashbacks and stuff. That's got to be hard for you, too.
It's been very interesting this run, this time around, and maybe it's because I've had more life experiences. I'm more aware of what I'm doing, but I don't know how I did it as long as I did without any problems, or maybe I had problems and I didn't realize I was having problems, you know, but now, you know, I know about depression and, all of that stuff. So
in a funny way, is this a coping mechanism for you?
It's this time around, I really don't know what's going on. I do know that I just realized today that I'm depressed. I've been down for a good couple of weeks, so I'm needing a break. I'm beginning to feel like I need a little slight bit of separation from
mm-hmm.
her
mm-hmm.
so that I can keep going, because I feel like I'm going down a deep hole now. Really do. So I was thinking maybe I should find a therapist while I'm in New York.
We're speaking with Dee Dee Bridgewater, the Grammy and Tony Award-winning jazz vocalist, and starring in Lady Day, the off-Broadway show at the Little Schubert Theater, which is slated to run through March of 2014. So
yes.
You got to...
I'm gonna knuckle down.
Yeah, knuckle down.
And then I'm thinking I'm gonna, you know, maybe get a trainer. I'm not disciplined, but I think if I start to exercise, maybe that will help too.
They say that's very
stuff.
Good for depression.
That's
too.
What they say.
Yeah.
So
Dee Dee Bridgewater with us on Soundcheck. You want to do Loverman next?
Sure.
All right, and rejoining two of the members of the onstage band that performs with her each night at the Little Schubert Theater in Lady Day, Bill Jolly at our piano, James Kamak playing the double bass. Here's a song associated with Billie Holiday, Lover Man.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling so sad. I long to try something I never had. Never had no kissing. Ooh, what I've been missing. Lover man, oh, where can you be? The night is cold and I'm so all alone. I'd give my soul just to call you my own. Got a moon above me, but no one to love me. Lover man, where can you be? I've heard it said that the thrill of romance can be like a heavenly dream. And I go to bed with a prayer you'll make love to me. Strange as it seems, someday we'll meet and you'll dry all my tears and whisper sweet little things in my ears. Hugging and kissing, Ooh, what I've been missing. Love a man. Oh, where can you be?
Dee Dee Bridgewater, live on Soundcheck with Billie Holiday's Lover Man, with Bill Jolly at our piano, James Kamak playing the bass, and all of them on stage at the Little Schubert Theater each night through March with Lady Day, written and directed by Stephen Stahl. The show takes place in London and
yes.
circa
1954.
Okay. And this song, Foggy Day, sort of brackets the first act.
Yes, it does.
Of the play.
That's a very nice way to put it. Yeah.
Well, let's hear how you and the boys put it. You want to play it for us?
Okay. Foggy day in London town. It had me low and it had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long, I wondered, could it last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. Then suddenly, you know, I saw you standing there. And through foggy London town, the sun was shining everywhere. You had me low, had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long, I wondered, could it last? The age of miracles hadn't passed. Then suddenly I saw you standing there in foggy London town. The sun was shining everywhere.
Dee Dee Bridgewater, live on Soundcheck with Foggy Day in London Town. Bill Jolly at our piano. He plays the role of Sonny, who was Billie Holiday's pianist. James Kamak, the bassist, plays the role of Dion, who is the bassist in the band. Dee Dee Bridgewater, of course, plays Lady Day herself, Billie Holiday, on stage at the Little Schubert Theater each night through March, and celebrating the life and work of Billie Holiday. And Dee Dee, it is an incredible portrayal. Thank you very much.
You're so welcome. Thank you, John.
Who do you think is coming to town? You'll never guess who. A lovable hugger by Emily Brown. Miss Brown to you. What if the rain comes thundering down? My heaven is blue. Canopies in there, me, Emily Brown. You all get too familiar. Why do you think she's coming to town? Just wait and you'll see. The lovable little Miss Brown to you is baby to me. Oh yeah.
And there's an additional song from Dee Dee Bridgewater from the Billie Holiday songbook, available at soundcheck.org. Up next, the music scene that set the stage for Prince. We'll hear about the Minneapolis sound and a new collection called Purple Snow next on Soundcheck.
Purple rain.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 1984 was a landmark year for the music scene in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That year, Prince hit number one on the Billboard Albums chart with this soundtrack to Purple Rain. The film featured the Twin Cities in a supporting role, and it introduced us to a funk band called The Time, who scored R&B hits with The Bird and Jungle Love. But a red-hot music scene doesn't spring up overnight, and a new compilation chronicles 10 years of lesser-known Twin Cities funk and R&B that launched a revolution. Or at least, Prince and the Revolution. The set is called Purple Snow, forecasting the Minneapolis sound. And in a moment, we'll talk with one of its featured artists, but first I'm joined on the line by Jonathan Kirby of Numero Group, the record label that has released Purple Snow. Hi, John.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So, Purple Snow, forecasting the Minneapolis sound. I like how you reference both the weather and Prince in one fell swoop. So, who are we talking about? Is this like pre-Prince?
Yeah. You know, I sort of look at it, the musical and cultural climate of the Twin Cities around the time that Prince was coming of age and getting into music and you know, people from his sort of graduating class, and how the local music scene sort of changes and bends and bows to either assimilate with the Prince sound or rebel against the Prince sound, or just, you know, it sort of changes everything.
Yeah.
That signing. So we're just sort of taking a look at that, you know, before, during, and after.
So can you distinguish between the Minneapolis sound pre and post Prince?
It was a slow evolution. You know, there were bands in the Twin Cities who had two keyboards, you know, before Prince's band did. There were groups that were, you know, singing in a, you know, a falsetto that Prince is often associated with before Prince. But, you know, Prince and the Minneapolis sound are sort of synonymous, and we were sort of saying, well, yes, you know, Prince is certainly a member of that sound, but he's not the lone contributor, the lone factor in what we think of as the Minneapolis sound.
All right. So the compilation is called Purple Snow, Forecasting the Minneapolis Sound, two CDs, four LPs or digital downloads, and the time frame is 1974 to 1984. So is Purple Rain kind of the cutoff, the end of the time period here?
We felt like Purple Rain was sort of when the cover was blown off
yeah,
the Minneapolis
yeah.
sound. It was when the Minneapolis sound became national or international currency. Everybody had a look at it. Everybody had a listen to it. So this
right.
was when sort of the Minneapolis sound still had its innocence, was still finding footing locally before it went national.
And if we go back to 1975, you have a song by a band called 94 East, the name of a major interstate that runs through the Twin Cities. And this song by 94 East features a young Prince Nelson on guitar.
Now it's much too late, and there's no time for me to try. Not anymore. Oh no, baby. I don't feel no pain. It doesn't hurt inside. And I'm doing better.
Song's called If You See Me, recorded in 1975 by the band 94 East, led by Pepe Willie, and featuring a young Prince Nelson on guitar, who would soon lose the Nelson and become just Prince. The new set called Purple Snow, Forecasting the Minneapolis Sound, looks at Minneapolis and St. Paul, the years 1974 to 84. We're speaking with Jonathan Kirby of the Chicago-based record label Numero Group. And joining us on the line now as well is one of the musicians whose work is featured on Purple Snow. Andre Simone is a musician who grew up playing in Minneapolis bands, many of them with Prince, and then launched a solo career and produced albums for Jody Watley and Adam Ant and others, and he's on the line with us from L.A. Hi, Andre.
Hi.
So how would you define the Minneapolis sound, having been in there, you know, during these years we're talking about?
You know, it's kind of hard to define it because there's so many different contributions. I think, as John said in the intro, a lot of those groups that are on the compilation had a very, very profound effect on Prince and myself growing up. I think he, you know, one of the groups is Purple Haze.
Waiting for the sun to rise. Waiting for the moment, yeah, when I'm walking through the park with you.
Flight Time, the first early version of Flight Time. There was a group called The Family, which is Sonny Thompson, Joe Lewis, Michael Lewis, Roland Willis, a lot of those guys. I mean, when we were little kids, we, you know, or young, you know, I guess 13, 14, we would see those groups and we would stand by the side of the stage and just watch, you know, literally oogle these guys because they were unbelievable musicians. You know, I mean, it just, you know, there was a climate back then that, you know, it just doesn't exist right now that, you know, breeded the type of music. I mean, music is one thing, but the attitude was a whole nother thing. And I think the other thing that contributed to a major part of the sound was, you know, being in the Midwest, you kind of had, you know, you were in the middle of, you know, of everything. You had New York on one side, you had Los Angeles on the other side, and we were kind of in the middle, sort of getting things filtered in, sometimes late. But, you know, the only radio stations that played music were kind of top 40. So we heard everything from Joan Baez to, you know, Santana, to the Beatles, to, it was just a cornucopia of so many different kinds of musical styles. And I think, you know, for myself, and I think for Prince as well, I mean, I can't speak for everybody, but, you know, we were in a group together. You know, we got all of those different things, and I think that contributed to the sound.
Now, that early band you played in with Prince, was that Grand Central?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And then, you were in his touring band till 81, right?
That's correct. Yep.
So when you first heard about this project, did this send you, like, up to the attic to dig through old tapes and stuff?
You know, it really did. You know, John was very, very specific about what he was looking for because, you know, I mean, it normally, you know, for me personally, I don't get involved in, you know, in things like that, you know, things of this nature. I don't really go back because, you know, I'm trying to stay working on the things that I'm working on. But the way he... the context that he put it in made me really interested because the emphasis wasn't, you know, just on one person. And he was very specific on what he wanted. He wanted just something that captured, you know, a certain sound before it became, you know...
really popular, you know, yeah.
Really popular.
So one of the things you found and which John Kirby ended up using in the Purple Snow compilation is this demo. This is Andre Simone and a song called Somebody Said. Andre Simone and a demo tape called Somebody Said, recorded not long before Andre was signed to Columbia Records back in 1982. Andre, is that just you or are there other people in the room with you there?
No, that's just me, and I think I did that in my mom's attic, literally, on a little four-track.
Andre Simone is a musician and producer from the Minneapolis scene during the 70s and 80s, now working out of L.A. Jonathan Kirby from the Chicago-based record label Numero Group. John, I mean, everyone knows who Prince is. Lots of people still remember Morris Day and The Time fondly. But you also look at the early years of Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. How important are these guys?
Wow. I mean, you know, they're very important to modern pop music. And
although people may not recognize their names because they're behind, they're the producers behind Janet Jackson and Mariah Carey and New Edition.
Absolutely. But it's sort of, you know, you're pulling the thread on the sweater and it's unraveling and you're getting back to the root of it. And, you know, Jimmy had a group called Mind and Matter.
Baby.
Bass player and one of the principals in a band called Flight Time, which would predate The Time.
It's the things that you do.
Eventually, after, you know, 100% turnover of its membership, become The Time with Terry Lewis on bass and Jimmy on keyboards. Because of the constant turnover of their membership, anytime they recorded, that recording would almost become obsolete because, you know, with the instance with the two songs on our compilation, they were sung by Cynthia Johnson, who within the year would have sung Funky Town by Lips, Inc., which became this sort of national phenomenon.
Absolutely.
So when she left the group, they have a demo tape with Cynthia Johnson singing on it. Alexander O'Neill steps in for her. So then that tape becomes obsolete. It no longer represents the talents or the sound or the texture of Flight Time's music. So it's just sort of, you know, put it on the shelf and move on and figure out the next residency or the next gig. So, you know, they're certainly cornerstones of the ever-evolving music scene that was taking place in the Twin Cities. But if you ask them, they would say, oh, no, you know, it was about, you know, oh, we love the family, we love Hayes. You know, a lot of people, you know, looked up to Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, but then there's just another set of musicians in the Twin Cities that they looked up to. So mm-hmm. We were just trying to, with Purple Snow, we were just trying to account for all those individuals and just say, you know, no matter how huge and influential someone may seem in the Minneapolis sound, there's someone who, you know, preceded them,
right,
and they deserve acknowledgement as well.
So giving credit where credit is due on this compilation called Purple Snow, Forecasting the Minneapolis Sound. John, do you have a favorite on the set?
You can't really pick a favorite. In knowing all these people and understanding where they come from, I love Andre's song. It's not because he's on the line. I think it's just such a fascinating look at the symbiotic, binary relation between Andre and Prince. I do consider them sort of two sides of the same coin, and it's just to hear somebody said and hear where he was coming from at that period was just like a really fascinating glimpse inside of the Minneapolis sound. But then you have a song like I Love You by Herman Jones, who was just a guy on the scene, an older cat who had been in a group called the Exciters and was just, you know, sort of a blue-collar guy playing, you know, working day jobs. And he really created some really beautiful music that he funded, you know, himself,
mm-hmm.
Never put out. You know, kind of a weekend warrior, you know, a nice, kind, gentle soul living in Bloomington, Minneapolis, but then going into the studio and just, you know, making something that was sort of a composite sketch of all the stuff going on in the Twin Cities at that time.
And his name was Herman Jones.
Herman Jones, yeah, he's on that compilation twice.
Love for one another was a rule. When the teacher made you
Andre, what about for you? I mean, is there someone on this compilation, apart from yourself, of course, that you think every aspiring young musician should know?
Wow, you know, I'd have to concur with John. You know, I mean, it's hard to really identify one particular, you know, group. I mean, the old Andre, you're right, would say, yeah, me. the new improved Andre, you know, is a little bit more, you know, a little bit more. I look at really the different contributions.
Well, I think that actually is kind of the point of this set, isn't it? That, you know, it's not all about, the Minneapolis sound is not all about one guy,
exactly.
However princely he may be. the set is called Purple Snow, Forecasting the Minneapolis Sound, compiled by Jonathan Kirby for the Chicago-based record label Numero Group, and featuring, among others, Andre Simone, who's now based in L.A., but was on the scene in the 70s and 80s. John and Andre, to the two of you, it's fascinating stuff. Great to hear it, and thank you so much for sharing it with us today.
Thank you,
John.
If you see me,
on the show, Lynn Goldsmith has photographed Bruce Springsteen, Patti Smith, Michael Jackson, Miles Davis, James Brown, and many, many more. And she's got behind-the-scenes stories about each of them. Plus, live music from the singer, songwriter, and model known as Seasick Mama. That's tomorrow on the show. That does it for today. Be back here for another sound check. I'm John Schaefer.